Welcome to another episode of Flag Stays Down Podcast, 3-point edition. But only two members of the pod on tonight. You got myself, Andy. We got Parker back from London, back bringing the wins with him. Parker, how you doing?
You can't say that when I was actually in London. We drew Brentford, so I didn't get to go to the match. You know, when they only allocate 1,400 tickets for away fans. Tickets go insanely high on the secondary market. So didn't really want to spend £250 on a ticket. So I didn't, which means I didn't get to continue my streak of dominance seeing wins. But it wouldn't have even been the same, Andy, because it would have been my streak of dominance is at Stamford Bridge. So I don't have an away track record yet. And I'm not really willing to gamble on it with this team just because you don't really know. You don't really know what squad you're going to get. And yeah, that Brentford match was full of ups and downs, as we saw. But 3-point addition today, my long haul back over the pond brought us a win. So I will take full and absolute credit on that. It didn't have anything to do with Cole Palmer or Mikhail Mudryk or Nico Jackson scoring some goals for us. Didn't have anything to do with that. No, I love spending time in London. I'm lucky enough where my job takes me there. Usually once a year. This year I'll get to go back, but the idiots that planned my second trip is in July, so I'm fucking pissed about that. Why would they do that? Why did they not consult the Chelsea schedule? I don't know, man. It's been poor planning all around this year, so I'm not the happiest of campers for that. But do love spending time in London. Do love spending time. I try to go to Stamford Bridge just to see it every time I'm in London and go into the mega store and pick something up for myself. And just be there. I've always like valued the items I buy at the store in person more than anything else, really, just because it's my team. It's our home ground and I like going there. It reminds me that might not always be our home ground and that there are still talks about like moving to King's Court or somewhere else. So there's a finite amount of time that I couldn't see Stamford Bridge in its glory. So try to soak that up as much as I can. So that's been my last couple of days. My work schedule has been a little insane. I've traveled the past 2 weekends for work. And then my little brother was in town this weekend with his fiance. He was in town for a ski trip. So played host for a little bit of time as well. So I'm looking forward to a quieter travel schedule for the upcoming future. I don't think I have a trip planned for the rest of March. So I'm ecstatic about that. And when I'm ecstatic about that, I get to see more football, I get to watch more F1, and I get to cook more meals in my own house, which makes me a happy camper. That's a big, long intro, Andy. How you doing, man?
I'm good. And you know what's going to happen? You're going to go to London in July, and they're going to announce another preseason date. They're going to be playing in Denver while you're gone.
I would kill myself.
Well, don't do that. I got to fight Matt every week. No, nothing. Things are good. Busy, hectic week. We didn't end up potting last week for some stuff that was going on. So, happy to be past that stuff and, back to the grind at work and looking forward to this upcoming weekend. Get to go down to Kansas City for my, niece's baptism. So yeah, get to watch FA Cup fifth round, Kansas City Blues. Looking forward to that. That was a good time last time. Good pot pie for breakfast.
Good pot pie and great crowd.
Yes. But let's talk a little Chelsea. And where do you want to start? You want to start with the match or you want to start with the kind of off the pitch buildup during the week?
let's think it chronologically. Let's go with the some of the comments that were made because I think that was I think Poch is divisive no matter what he says at this stage, because I think everyone's kind of made up their mind about him. I don't think he's winning any new fans anytime soon until they see consistent results. So he opens his mouth. People don't love what he says. So let's start there. That's kind of fun.
Well, yeah, he did open his mouth this week several times. One of those times, the big one, was in reference to him getting the sack. First of all, said that's out of my hands. That's up to the owners. He said he will not quit, which take that for what you want. I think that's pretty positive that he's committed, even though this isn't the job I don't think he probably signed up for. But then later said in the same interview, Chelsea fans won't love any other manager more than him after him. You know, if he were to get the sack, he were to be replaced, Chelsea fans will turn on that manager just the same. Through the fan base for a loop, we'll say. Everybody had their own reactions to it. What do you make of what Poch said this week?
I think he's trying to humanize what's happened to him. And I think he's trying to set the stage for not necessarily like, if I get sacked, you won't love anyone else more than me, but you wouldn't have loved anyone else that came here and took on this project the way that I have. And I think he's looking for a little grace. Like he's probably looking in, you can see the common pattern where he said a couple of weeks ago where he's like, this happened to Liverpool, no one's jumping on Jurgen Klopp. This happened to City, no one's jumping on Pep. This happens to me and everyone's down my throat. And he's just trying to look for a little bit of grace from the fans where, you know, some of these like ups and downs, some of these hills and valleys happen. And then when you look at the state of the team and who they are and what their DNA is today, it's a U23 team, effectively, out there on the pitch. It's a U23 team. Those peaks and valleys are more exasperated. They have more focus on them. Of course, the players, the amount of money spent on them has definitely a highlight and a spotlight on it. All that aside, though, I mean, people expect miracles. I mean, people expect things to come in and just change on a dime. And we haven't seen that in the last four managers, if you count Bruno, right? Like,
we don't talk about Bruno.
Yeah, we don't really talk about that guy. But to disagree with you, just to touch on what you first said, like I think he did know what he was getting himself into. I think this is what he signed up for, which is a project. And he keeps calling it that. And everyone kind of keeps like talking about the fact that he's talking about it as a project. But it is. And I think it was a losing job no matter who got it. Like, I don't think there was any manager that could have come in and instantly turned it around. I think that there was going to be these highs and lows regardless of who the manager was, which is why I don't try to pin it on the manager. Now, there's things that I can pin on a manager. There's things that I agree with. I don't always tell you, Collins. There's things I agree with what you say, talking about like coming out of halftime today against Newcastle and not seeing more of a fight out of the dressing room or trying to correct some of the things that happened that we all watched. And they come out complacent and Newcastle kind of takes it to us in the first 5, 7, 8 minutes of that second half. And it looks like we're going to concede. That's a recipe for disaster, right? And that's how managers get themselves on the hot seat, when you don't see that change, the tactics and just that like drive and the motivation, things like that out of a halftime speech. You're like, fuck do the guys talk about at halftime? Like, you're not doing it. Whatever you talked about, you're not doing it. Eventually they pulled it around, obviously. Took their chance as well. Had some good goals. But I think Poch is looking for a bit longer of a leash than is normally given for Chelsea managers. He may be looking for something that isn't there just because Chelsea managers don't get that kind of a leash, right? We all know that. But given his circumstances, I think he deserves it. And I think he deserves that consideration around where the team was when he got it, where the team is now today, and the form we've been in, and how we've seen some improvement now. We talked about that in the past few months of not really seeing some improvement. Like, I'm seeing some things turn around. I'm seeing some improvement from some players. I'm seeing some more cohesiveness. We're starting to get some guys back. Good to see Cucurella back. I understand what he's doing. And I understand why the comment divides people, but I also understand what he's doing.
Yeah, and I understand it as well. I'll agree with you there, but it's almost like these things are said in a vacuum, right? And when you're evaluating it that way, I guess it's not in a vacuum. It's just from a different context. But if you kind of zoom out and look at Poch as a manager and as a whole. This is very Rafa Benitez-esque. He came into a hostile environment where he was not well-liked to begin with. Former Spurs manager, Rafa being former Liverpool. So you've already lost half the fan base there. He then, in the lead up to the Tottenham match, said, oh, I would love to coach again at Tottenham. You can't say that as the manager of Chelsea ever. That's self-sabotage. It's a U23 team, and he came in day one and said, Chelsea's about winning. We're going to win. Anything else is a failure. Now you got to walk that back as you are losing, as you are picking up losses. I think we are one loss away from totaling last year, or maybe we're one loss above last year's total. I can't remember. We're close to that. And then, you don't see the changes at halftime. You know, one thing we saw under Tuchel, and we saw it, you know, before that under Frank the first time, and we've seen that in managers prior, is that Chelsea come out in the second half and they look like a completely different team for the better. This team doesn't concede in the first half ever, except for today. They look decent defensively. They create chances in the first half, and then we come out in the second half consistently and look poor. And so for him to be asking for time, well, it's like, well, okay, you need to show us something. You need to show us that you are coaching this team. I will give him credit, though. Since the Thiago Silva thing, the Bell Silva, basically on Twitter asking for a coaching change, Silva was, quote unquote, injured for, a week or two. He has not featured since. He didn't play him today. And this was a typical game where you would see Thiago Silva play. Sat him on that bench. Now, is Thiago Silva a cancer? No. I don't believe that whatsoever. But does it cause issues? Had he played? Yes. There would have been all kinds of headlines. That stuff leaks into the locker room. We saw with the whole Mason Mount thing that these players are very active on social media. They know what's being said. They're very in tune with all of that. So I'll give him props for making a stand there. And, Thiago Silva probably wasn't the best player to be playing today anyways, but he didn't lean on Thiago Silva. He didn't lean on, oh, well, he's a leader. He's been around, blah, 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 blah. He played Trev and Axel, which turned out okay. So I'll give him credit there for at least starting to make changes in the lineup.
The interesting thing about that back line, when you look at the back line that started today versus day one, it's way different. Marco Correa as left back, Trev as center back. I think Disasi probably started for us, and then Malagusto. So, and I'm not saying anything bad about Malagusto, but like that's not your preferred four back there at all. Like that's not how you started the season, and so it's injuries. Plus, because I think Trev gives us another solid-ish back, person back there, especially with Levi Colwell out, which people don't like to talk about for whatever reason. I don't think anyone's really talked about that. Once again, I had to swallow my drink when, Martin Tyler brought up Newcastle's severe injury problems this year. And no one seems to like to talk about the fact that I just said, all of our guys are hurt too. Now, Enzo and Caicedo aren't, and they command $200+ million in the transfer market. So no one likes to talk about our injury wolves the same way that they do other people. But that back four is a little bit of a makeshift back four right now. It's not our preferred. I think everyone would kind of agree that it's just not our top flight team right now.
Well, and you can throw Georgie in there too. Georgie Petrovic, he was not the opening day starter. Started halfway through the season. So really your entire defense, everything behind Caicedo and Enzo has been turned over. I'm not complaining. I've been very vocal on this pod. I like Disasi. Malagusto, we're going to get to, I'm sure, in a little bit here. He's been fantastic. Cucurella is a better defender, I would say, than Chilwell. Doesn't offer as much going forward, but defensively, better. And Trev, I don't know if we've seen enough of him this year to pass judgment.
No, and I think it's kind of funny, like the Cucurella thing. He obviously like made a mistake that led to a goal, but it was a worldy of a goal. Like, it wasn't a mistake that led to a tap in. It was one of the best goals you'll see all season.
I wasn't even mad at it. It was just like, wow, okay.
Fuck me. That was a hell of a hit. So it wasn't like, it was a mistake that led to a goal, kind of, with an asterisk.
Good thing Matt's not on.
Yeah, it's just vibes for him.
Yeah, right.
He was just hanging out.
So the other thing this week, and I think we talked a little bit about this when Chelsea were going through the sale and whatnot, but the founder of Reign, who is one of the co-owning companies of Blue Co., came out this week and said, had the deal not been done when it was done, Chelsea were weeks from liquidation, which obviously would have put a damper on this podcast. Although we had kind of joked around of, hey, if Chelsea's not a club anymore, who would you cheer for? So I'll pose the question again. Chelsea get liquidated in the whole turnover and sanctions and all that. What do you look like as a football fan?
First, I'll start by saying we talked about that as a realistic possibility. This isn't news. We knew that this was really close to happening. We talked about that at length when it was real, because we didn't know. We didn't know what that answer was, right? I mean, it's really dire to think about what would happen if this club ceased to exist. I mean, you hear about it, you hear about the stories, you just don't really think it's going to happen to your club, especially a club that's in the top flight and has been for quite some time. It would be really hard for me to support a Premier League squad from day one. It would probably take me trying to go to a couple of games in London to see if I could feel a connection like I have with this club. It's kind of funny. I had a client of mine who was staying in London a couple extra days, and he was going to go to a QPR match. I was a little jealous. I was like, that sounds like an awesome place to go to a match. Like, Championship match. I know that they're not doing great right now, but still a relatively lively fan base and whatnot. So, you know, I think I would try to find something in Germany. And the closest thing I've seen to that feels like Chelsea would be like a Borussia Dortmund in Germany. But it'd be really tough for me to support anyone in the top six. It would be hard to support Liverpool. It'd be hard to support either Manchester team, Tottenham, no, Arsenal, not even. Like, those are like so hard of no's that it's just not even a starter for me. So I don't know. I'd probably be a much bigger F1 fan than I would be a soccer fan if that happened today. I don't watch a lot of matches outside of Chelsea. Like, I consider myself, and I saw this on social media, like, do you consider yourself like a fan of your team, or do you consider yourself a fan of the sport and then your team? Like, which comes first? And I'm a Chelsea fan first and a football fan second. And not everyone's like that. Some people are football fans first and then their club second, which is totally fine. And I'm not docking either way. It's just, I'm a Chelsea fan and I don't watch a lot of soccer outside of it. And I don't cheer for anyone else really outside of it. So it'd be a tough transitional period. I'm sure I'd find something somewhere because I love the sport. Clearly, like, it's been a massive part of my life for a long time. And I love the environment and I love being a part of it. And I love that, you know, it's part of our ritual. It's part of our Saturdays. It's part of our Sundays. It's part of our Sunday nights every week. So I'd have to find something, but I don't know what that is, man. Got a better answer?
No, I'm like you. It's Chelsea first, sports second. I couldn't. I know I've mentioned Burnley before, but I like Burnley, but not enough to follow them on a weekly basis. then you kind of look around Europe and what we have access to here in the States, and you don't have access to any league like you do the Premier League. You can't watch every single game of every team readily. I know Bundesliga, there's quite a bit of coverage. La Liga, you get maybe 3-4 matches a week. France, unless you're subscribing to, what are they on, BN?
I'm not even sure.
Yeah, but even that is, you know, one or two games. And I'm sure as hell not supporting MLS at this point with their dropping out of the US Open Cup. That's another pod for another day. But I don't know. Maybe go back to following Lyon in France passively, or, you know, watching Dutch league. That is my guilty pleasure, I will say that, watching the Dutch league on a Saturday or Sunday morning. But yeah, no, it's kind of Chelsea or nothing, as we're not on video right now, but Parker, as you see behind me, Chelsea or nothing.
I have maybe a controversial take here, and I'm a touch reluctant to say out loud. A team I could see myself supporting potentially in a case of my team gets liquidated in no other case would be Fulham.
Okay.
Little brother to Chelsea. I've always had a little bit of an admiration for that team and the fans, and I've been there for a match and I actually enjoyed my time there. And I wouldn't mind supporting a bit of a smaller club that has higher upside and has some Americans that play for them, and has historically had some Americans that played for them. Clint Dempsey's played for them, and I can't remember the defender that was there as well.
Was Gooch there for a while? Onyewu?
I think he was, but more recent than that. For a while, there was an American defender, and I'm struggling to...
Tim Ream.
Thank you. So, kind of a... You get a little bit of a sister club to the US, right? Where you've got some Americans at play. And I could see myself in a pinch supporting them.
Craven Cottage is one of my like bucket list stadiums to go to. Just it looks fantastic, at least, you know, on TV and whatnot. And obviously you've been closer than I have here, but I like the small atmosphere, as you know, going Ford Madison matches and all that. It's, if you got a good crowd in a small venue, you can get a good atmosphere.
Absolutely. It was a blast. And it was a shitty night where it was like raining sideways, and I still had a blast. So it's great.
Well, luckily our club wasn't liquidated. Positive. We are still sitting in 11th after a 3-2 win over Newcastle. Although with game in hand on most of the league at this point. So as you mentioned, we had goals from Nico, Cole Palmer, and Mihailo Mudrik. We'll start with just game takeaways here. What was your first takeaway from the game?
I mean, assist of the season for Gallagher, obviously. I mean, that Mikhail Mudrik running into him and taking the ball and then going on to score, which he did fantastically well and slotted it well. It's funny. I feel like Nico has tried to slot a keeper like that, or, you know, wrong foot him and go by him 17 times and hasn't been as successful as Mudrik was with this one. So all joking aside, I think that goal was critical, because Even 3-2 at, you know, the 91st minute, we didn't look super comfortable to see that went out. And what I'm like desperately wanting to see from this team is the ability to kill off a win, the ability to see it out and just be a little bit more composed and a little bit more in control. And I get that they're going for goal and they're trying to score and, you know, really kill it off like that, but there's a time and a place for those moments. And I think just being under control and just really like being solid in their possession is a little bit more important in those matches. So it's very on brand. It was a very on brand win for us this season. It felt like a Chelsea win where we didn't know which way it was going to go. Especially with that late goal that Murphy had and what a goal it was and gave them some life. So, you know, Newcastle has had an up and down season. They're definitely not what they were last year and they were fighting for it. But our home form is starting to come together. Our home squad, and you mentioned since that the Thiago Silva drama and things like that have happened, I've started to see a real shift in the team. And I hadn't really seen like a pivotal moment until then, ironically, and it's just starting to feel like a more consistent result, as inconsistent as they are in their performances. I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but I'm starting to recognize this team. Does that feel right? I recognize who this team is and the ups and the downs come with this team, right? And this squad is young, but I love the way they celebrate goals. I love the way that they celebrate as a team. I love the way that they find ways to get things done. And at the end of the day, it's about wins.
The celebrating as a team, not my takeaway, but the Nico Jackson flick in off the Cole Palmer shot. And him and Palmer and Nico are like joking with each other after the goal. Last year, had that been a Havertz and João Felix or, you know, whoever's there, no one would have celebrated. It would have been like a whew, fist pump and then that's it and go back to the center line.
It would have been thank God someone scored.
Yeah, right. No, my biggest takeaway is that this is kind of that turning point in terms of the match day squads. I think today demonstrated against a decent opponent. Newcastle are struggling this year, but they're a Champions League squad. We are not. Raheem Sterling cannot turn the keeper one-on-one. Shoots it right into the gut of Dan Byrne. Mihailo Mudrik, on the other hand, comes on and runs for days. Has an Eden Hazard-esque dribble through the box, stealing it off of Conor Gallagher. Turns the keeper, slots it home. Mudrik did more in 30 minutes than Raheem Sterling did in 60. It has to be the moment that Mudrik unseats Raheem Sterling. And we finally get that front three that we've been asking for. And we finally get that run of games for Mudrik to build his confidence, especially going into now a run of six or seven games against mid-table to lower table teams. This has to be that turning point. And then if he benches Mudrik against Leicester on the weekend, I will be pissed.
As you should be, because not only is he performing, not only did he score, he looked livelier. The link-up play between him and Jackson was better. And Raheem Sterling isn't Raheem Sterling anymore. He's been given a lot of grace and runway at this team. And I'm not supporting him, but I'm struggling to find reasons to support him. Maybe even if I was, like, he's not doing what he's supposed to do, right? Like, your tweet said it all, where Raheem Sterling gets paid to finish those. That's the take. He gets paid to finish those goals. And he didn't. And he hasn't been. This isn't a one-off. This isn't, this isn't a Haaland bad day at the office against Chelsea kind of a situation, right? And then he goes back to his scoring ways. This isn't that. This is when you get paid 400 grand a week, you're not as motivated. You know, Dana White had a comment about Conor McGregor recently that I really enjoyed, where Conor McGregor, he's like, he lives basically on a boat where he gets fed grapes to him and he's got women all over the place and he's made more money than God. And he said, it's really hard to go back to getting punched in the face after that, right? Like, it's just natural that you just don't want to go back to getting punched in the face after you lived that life. I think that's a little bit of Raheem Sterling. He's getting paid most people's dream yearly salary in a week, every single week. And he doesn't have to do it much more anymore. So he was smiling after he missed that goal, where Cole Palmer's pissed off when he doesn't get fed a through ball on that play, and Cole Palmer's pissed off when things don't go the way he thinks that they should, and that's more of the demeanor I want to see out there. Cole Palmer's obviously hungry. Raheem Sterling has already eaten, and that's the difference between those guys. And I'm 100% with you that Mudrick's hungry. Mudrick wants it, and yeah, I know we've seen ups and downs out of him, and not the most consistent form, but it's better than not giving a shit.
And I know you can't read too much into goal celebrations because they are what they are. They're a moment of just adrenaline, right? But watching Mudrick roar as he slides on his knees there was fantastic. That he wanted that goal and no one was going to stand in his way. That's what I want. And especially as we're building towards, you know, getting some of these U20s that we've got loaned out back from loan, Kendry Páez coming in 2 years, Angelo coming back next year. If Sterling's not part of the long-term plan, but now is the time to make that transition. That's Mudrick on the right, Mudrick on the left, Palmer for the time being on the right or as a 10. And then you got Angelo coming back again, Kendry Páez coming in. Diego Morea has been starting to fire for the U23s. Not the first team, but you've got wingers in the fold. And so let them rip.
I'm going to throw another name into that mix. I know I'm not technically a winger, but we saw him today, which is Cesare Cassetti. He looked good today. Where do you think he fits in the long-term vision of this team?
I'm going to hate this take. Connor Gallagher's role. That's his spot. I liked what we did today where we were kind of running a two-striker system. I miss the 4-4-2 so much. To me, it's a lot more appealing to watch than a 4-3-3. But if we're going to run with a 4-4-2, you know, you've got Caicedo and Enzo in there, and then, I don't know, you got another midfielder kind of floating, I guess. I think what I've seen out of Cassidy is that he is a runner. He will press, but he also looks calm on the ball, which is something that Connor doesn't always look. Connor will punch you down, and he will get that ball back, but then I feel like he either doesn't know what to do with it, or he's already planned in his head what he's going to do with it, regardless of what's in front of him. Cassidy, you know, coming from Italy, coming from that Inter Academy, has the technical know-how. He knows how the game is played tactically. And now, you know, and then going to play for Leicester, which is another very tactic heavy squad. It was good for his development, even though, you know, it didn't end up working out. We had to recall him, but he looks calm on the ball, but also somebody who can go get the ball. He can press in defense. And we saw today he's good in the air too. He's a tall guy. I didn't realize how tall he was, but he can go up and get it. And with a small midfield of Caicedo and Enzo, you need kind of that anchor there.
I kind of see his role a little bit as like a John Obi Mikel, where you put him on to see off games. Like we saw that today, and just that calm under pressure, another defensive player, you sub Nico Jackson off for him, and it's just like, let's just lock things down. Let's just solidify. Let's lock things down. Let's have another outlet player to just be cool under pressure, calm in the ball, and knows where to go with it. I struggle with where he fits into a starting 11 because you don't need that all the time. And I haven't seen enough of his game going forward and like his creation and then like pressing up far. Because what Connor does really well is he pressures people into making a lot of mistakes, especially when we turn the ball over in their final third and they're in the final third. And then we are able to get the ball back before it crosses half line. So I don't know what he can bring to that fold yet, but I like his ability, and it excites me because we've looked at our squad, we've looked at our bench, and we haven't seen great options for, like, well, who would you bring on? Like, I don't know, like, half our team's hurt, so we don't really know who to bring on, and there's just not, like, there's not beneficial subs except for the fact of relieving someone who's been running for 80 minutes. Like, we haven't seen that positive, this is a stage in the game where we can see something change, and that this is one of them. And I like that as an option for us now.
So looking again to the future, you know, we had some great performances today. I think we've had some great performances out of some of our quote unquote new signings this year. Who are the maybe four or five players that are going to be the core? Who, you know, obviously not everybody works out. Everybody's a lottery ticket. But who are the ones that are guaranteed locks over the next 3-4 years?
That play today or overall?
Who is with the team right now?
Okay. It changes my answer. So I figured I'd clarify the question. Easy one. I think we can both agree on Cole Palmer. I think Enzo and Caicedo are both in it for the long haul, so we can add them to the list. Where I think it gets tricky is Disasi. I think he's here for the near term. I don't know about the far term, so he's kind of on the cusp. It's hard for me to not say Reece James's name. It is. I know that he's been rumored away and that sale of academy players has been talked about. It's hard for me to not say his name or Ben Chilwell's name for that matter. Even though I like Ben Chills, he's had an up and down season, you know, after coming off of what I think most people would call a fantastic season. He just hasn't been it. So, I'll say that the four players would be Palmer, Enzo, Caicedo, and Reece James. If I had to pick four, that'd be it.
Wow. So, Reece James being on the bubble, no Chilwell, and I know you like Connor Gallagher, but he was not in that list either. Those are your captains and vice captains. Not locks. Oof.
James is a lock. James is in.
Well, yes, James is in.
He was probably the last one in, but James is in.
So, yes, I agree. Caicedo and Enzo. I think, you know, getting another preseason under their belts working together and in this system, that's a lock in the midfield. Cole Palmer, absolute lock. I'm going to go same but different for my fourth choice. That's Malo Gusto. He's 20 years old. I would say, outside of his offensive prowess, is on the same level as Reece James defensively, at least from what we've seen. He's pocketed some of the best wingers in the league this year.
Like Doku?
Yeah. Some of the best karate artists in the league. He's bagged Martinelli, Matoma, Anthony Gordon today. He almost murdered Anthony Gordon. Oh no, sorry, that was Cucurella who murdered Anthony Gordon.
No one murdered Isak, which they should have, but
right.
I digress.
No, I think Malo Gusto is one of your signings of the season, absolutely. And the fact that he's only 20 and I think could probably play in the Euros this year for France, if not start in the Euros. He has to be one of your cornerstones. Here's why I don't include Reece James. And I was hoping Reece James would come up in this pod because I wanted to get your take on this. We want to raise funds. We want to, you know, profit. And, you know, there's a new FFP or something coming through from the Premier League this summer. We want to make sure we're compliant with that. If you get a $70-80 million offer, £1 million offer for Reece James from a Real Madrid or wherever Thomas Tuchel goes, I feel like you have to take it for a guy that hasn't started more than 25 games in his Chelsea career in a season.
Is that true?
Yeah, I just heard that on the radio today.
Damn, that's just a jarring stat. So I think the two reasons why you would say yes are obviously the pure profit, the ability to raise funds. He's an academy kid. And the fact that you have his immediate successor already defined and already showing out in a huge way. Are there positions on the pitch that we need a lot more help in than right back? Yes. Yes. Even though Nico Jackson has been in some form, striker is one of them. Keeper is another one where our keepers aren't bad, but I still think we need an elite level keeper still. I think this team is still missing that. I don't think we've had it since Thibaut Courtois, really, that we've had like an elite level keeper. And we take for granted what Petr Cech brought to the table, but Petr Cech was a difference maker and why we won back then. We haven't had one of those in a long time. So I think we're an elite keeper, an elite striker, and an elite center back away, probably, from really competing, especially in Europe. I mean, competing in the Premier League is one thing, but competing in Europe is another. So I don't know, man. We've talked about this before. Do we try to fit Reese in with Malagusto? I think Reese is still arguably one of the best in the world, which is really hard for me to want to get rid of. We've seen what he can do. And we've seen what he can do in a really shitty team. But let's talk about that for a second. We've seen Reece James shine with garbage around him. Can you imagine what Reece James would do with an Erling Haaland to cross balls into where they could finish them at a clip? Like, can we just talk about that for a second? How amazing that would be? Like, he's had nothing and he's still like really put a spotlight on who he is. And he finally got the surgery. We might see the turning point from his injury career and say, like, this is him going forward now, and he's free and clear. It's obviously like rosy-colored glasses looking forward, but it could be the fact. And if we sell him, it could look like the steal of a lifetime for whoever gets him.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there, but to me it comes back to the same argument we had about N'Golo Kanté. Do you pay him? And I know Reece James just signed a new contract, was it last year? So we have him for a couple of years, but the vultures have been swarming for a couple of years also. So I don't know. It's, do you want to keep that on the books for a guy who's only going to be healthy half of every season? But like you said, he finally had the surgery. So yeah, I think the important thing is that we try to get him back slowly this season and let him build into the preseason and build into next season. And if that happens to raise his value and shit, we get a £100 million offer for him, I don't think you can say no to it.
Yeah. If you get that top dollar crazy contract offer, like the Mbappe type offer from a Real Madrid, like, sure. If it's stupid money, go ahead. But it's I know you'll appreciate this because you're one that looks at things like this, but like his gym photos and his workout and his, like, he, that boy works, right? He is a gym hound. He is nothing except for trying to get better in every aspect of his life. He's a good dude. Like, he's a great locker room presence. There's just a lot around him that I really enjoy. And so it's hard. I mean, this is a business at the end of the day. It's big business. And can he fund three other players for us? Sure. I mean, this is what, you'll hate this, this is what the Brightons of the world struggle with, right? Where they're like, we produce this talent and we can sell him for record profit. But who do you go, who wants to go play for Brighton? Like, it's a hard trade-off, but like, if that helps fund an Osimhen or someone else, that helps us win games and we have a Malagusto to back him up, like, that's the hardest part, and that's the best problem to have, right? Where we've already identified Malo Gusto, and it's pretty damn good. He's done really well, and he's still super young. So he's been our signing of the century. All I care, like, it's ridiculous how good he's been.
So then, what do you do? You know, kind of piggybacking off of that core talk, what is your longer term back line look like? Because we've already debated Reese James and Malo Gusto. We have probably five capable center backs, and then you have Cucurella and Chilwell on the left. What do you do?
So I think it's Levi and I think it's DeSassi for the medium term, call it 3 years. DeSassi's what, like 26, something like that?
Yep.
Yeah, so I mean, he's got years left in the tank there. And I like having a more seasoned center back as a partner. Levi's younger, proven himself to be a capable left center back. Chills, you run into the same problem as Reese James. He hasn't been healthy. He hasn't proven to be consistent enough. And, you know, we spent a whole lot of money on Cucurella. I don't know how we don't look there to try to recoup some of that money spent, where he was a big name signing and a big ticket signing and came in and fought. One of those two is going to get sold in the next couple of years. And we're not keeping both of them on the payroll, and we're going to get a decent amount back for one of them. So the other is the starter, or neither of them, to be completely honest. I mean, it's hard to look forward 3 years, 2 years, but after this season and then after a whole nother next season, I'm not going to lie, it's hard for me to see either one of them still playing for us.
Yeah. The left back, I think somebody's going to come in and unseat those two, unseat Cucurella and Chilwell. Chilwell is he approaching 30? How old is Chilwell now?
Yeah, he's 27 or 28.
Yeah, so I mean, with his problems with his legs, I feel like you're going to see a decline as he gets closer to 30 here. Cucurella is still young, but it's a large enough sample size that you know what you have with him. I think he's a decent backup left back. Again, good thing Matt's not on the pod today. Center back is where I foresee some issues. Wesley Fofana, world record center back. We've seen him in all of, what, five games? Badi Ashile was a low-cost signing, but I know he's coming back from injury. He hasn't looked the greatest. Colwell has been up and down. He's been better as a center back than a left back. But everybody seems to like him outside of Chelsea as well. So that leads me to believe he probably has a decent future. DeSassi, I think, in my internal scenario here where Reese James is sold, Chilwell is not here long term. Gallagher is more of a squad player. I think DeSassi is your captain. He's somebody who very clearly fights for the badge. You know, just his crowd surfing alone is fantastic. But I think as he approaches his upper 20s, he will only age like a fine French wine, and kind of harness, you know, figure out the speed of the game and kind of harness his ability there, especially his aerial ability. And he's already a captain at Monaco. He's been capped internationally with France. I think he has the potential to be the anchor in that defense.
And weirdly, like, the more he scores goals, like, that's something that, like, John Terry always did. John Terry came up with goals when he least expected it, and just, like, those big moment goals from a set. Thiago Silva did too, to be fair. Like, those are the guys that, like, that you lean on. And I've not understood. I've been a quieter supporter of DeSassi than you have been. I haven't seen him do almost anything wrong. Like, he's had shakier moments, but like find me a center back in the league that hasn't had shaky moments. You're up against the world's best. I mean, shit, it happens. Everyone has. So, like, adjusting to a league, like, I think he's done fantastically well. And our team hasn't been super solid around him, and he's still done pretty well. So, like, I don't know where any of that hate from the Saucy comes from. And I just think he's been a really consistent, really positive squad kind of guy where you celebrate goals, you're in there, you're fired up, you're happy to be at your job that day, and you score some goals too. And it's good to see him get on the score sheet and contribute that way, and then celebrate, you know, big stops like their goals as well.
So one last guy who likes to celebrate, but I think is an interesting long-term debate here. Nico Jackson. He's got, was it 15 goals and 15 goal contributions so far this season, which surpassed our two leaders from last year in Kai Havertz and Raheem Sterling. He's, again, another young guy. He has now just about 2 years of first team, first division experience between Villarreal and here. It's not always pretty, but he seems to find the back of the net. Is he a long-term guy, or is he a guy that is expendable?
Expendable, no. I still want him to be a part of it. I think that he is where you try to solve first. And I think that's where a lot of the press headlines are, especially, you know, Ivan Toney and Victor Osimhen, like, coming in and bringing someone who's been there, done that, I think is just obviously part of the conversation. But he's fighting. He's starting to do things that, you know, people wanted him to do, and he's scoring more goals. I think it's an attribute to him, and I think it has to do with the team as well that's around him. I think we have more of a dynamic up and down team that lets in a little bit more goals and scores a little bit more goals as well, which, you know, we haven't been really used to. Like, we've usually been a defensively sound team first and then score goals team second. And so this team is a little bit more erratic in that equation. So I think his numbers are inflated because of that, but no, he's doing a good job. He's one of the players where I think if you look at the beginning of the year to today, he has shown some of the most growth that we've seen. And Collins, I know you're a growth guy, right? Like, you wanted to see what Poch has done to help develop players. And I know I made fun of it via text the other day, but Pochettino is kind of showing him some other people that, like, hey, here's how some other legends have finished in their career, and showing some Drogba highlights and other player highlights of trying to get Jackson to hone in on his finishing and whatnot, which I think is a silly thing to do as a coach. But you know what? Like, Jackson's a young guy and he seems hungry for goal. And so he's one of those, like, fringe players for me where I don't know if he's part of our team in 3 years, but he definitely helps us get to 3 years. Like, he helps us take steps forward. He's going to have a role in the team this year. He's going to have a role in the team next year and probably the year after that. Now, will he be our out and out striker after that? Like, I'm not sure. And will he score 15 goals next year? I'm not sure, because I think we might go sign someone that does that instead. But he's definitely part of process. He's part of the team, and he's part of this project that is taking us from this mid-tableness to what will eventually fight for European, you know, glory.
Yeah, see, and I think he is your out and out nine for the next 4 or 5 years. You know, one of my favorite things I've ever read is Soccernomics, and I know it's a little bit outdated at this point, but one of the things they talk about is you never spend big money, you never spend the bulk of your budget on a striker. you know, center backs when they were growing up in the academy, most of them were strikers. Most talented players in the academy were strikers at one point. So you can get goal scorers just about anywhere. Now, we have seen last year, for example, year before that as well, that doesn't always work out. Doesn't always work out in your favor. But we paid what, $30 million for Nico, and he has already doubled our output of last year for this position. And yes, I have seen growth out of him, and I was very impressed today. Just looking at today as a sample size, you look at all the things you want him to do. He made runs in between the lines. He occupied space in between, you know, in gaps in between defenders. But most of all, he was an outlet. When we were pinned back, we had to boot the ball. He was getting ahead on just about every single ball. He had the amazing flick on back to Sterling that Sterling ended up fucking up. Jackson had the second assist, you could say the hockey assist on Mudrick's goal. And, you know, basically he was making a nuisance of himself. Timo Werner did a very similar thing, but Timo Werner was not good in the air. You couldn't use him for holdup play. Kai Havertz was tall, should have been able to do some holdup play. Could not do it, did not know how to use his body. Nico Jackson combines the best of those two. And again, with only 2 years of first division experience, he still has a lot of growth to do. So I think the sky's the limit for Nico. And what I would like to see, I've come down on this because I wanted Osimhen, I wanted Ivan Toney. But I was a little bit sold on Nico Jackson to start the year. I'm a lot of it sold on him now. Bring in somebody like we did back in the day, like a Demba Ba, a Samuel Eto'o, a Didier Drogba for the second stint there, a veteran goal scorer who can come in off the bench or start in the cup games, or, you know, give Nico a break, but somebody that he can also learn from in real time. That's the play. That's what I want to see.
A Nicholas Anelka?
Yes. Yes. Big fan.
I'm surprised you didn't mention his very instinctive flick. Like that shot was wide from Cole, and that flick on was the reason it went in the back of the net. Not an easy skill to do. And I know sometimes he gets a little bit cute and he tried like a little bit of a back flick to nobody later on in the game, and so it doesn't always work out right. It's not perfect, but you can definitely see a lot of growth out of the kid, and you know, that's what makes me excited about the project. Is we have good players, we've got a squad there, and I've been able to see it 2 months ago. It's just we haven't seen it play out in the results and the consistency and the position in the table that we're sitting at. Like, it doesn't look and feel like Chelsea yet, but like, it's there. It's just not there yet. So I think he's probably the most intriguing part. Him and Mudrick are the most intriguing parts of this process to me, because they're hot, cold, they're emotional players. They are young, they're dynamic. They got a lot of upside to them, and it might look like the most brilliant move ever, and it might look like the dumbest move ever, and we don't know what that result is going to be yet. But, you know, I think, like, you brought up, like, Timo Werner, and I think Timo Werner could succeed in this team because of his speed and his abilities. We just didn't have a team around him to play, and, like, it's just the scenario was all wrong for him to succeed with us, and he turns out to be a complete flop. Christian Pulisic has 14 goals and assists this year in Milan, and he had like two or three last year with Chelsea. It's like, we've signed good players that just don't always work in the scenario that's around them at the time that we sign them. It's just, it's tough to evaluate things like that because it makes you think about other things other than what's important, which is winning. You're trying to like look around the winningness of your team and try to like piece back the why. But in a world where Nico Jackson's brilliant header to Raheem Sterling wasn't an assist, and Connor Gallagher's was today. Tells me that the stats lie to you. Like, the stats are bullshit, because one was brilliant and the other was accidental, and they show up differently on the stat sheet, man. So that's why we watch games, and that's why we, you know, talk bullshit on a podcast, because there's more to it than meets the eye, and there's more to it than meets the number sometimes.
Well, speaking of those numbers, last question for you before we wrap this up. Still 11th on 39 points. We are 4 points out of 7th, currently occupied by West Ham, and 8 points out of 6th, which will presumptively be a Europa League spot, depending on all the coefficients and whatnot. We do have a game in hand, so essentially 5 points out of 6th if we win that one against Spurs. Do we have a shot of making Europe in any form out of the league?
I think absolutely, because two things. One, we're not mathematically eliminated. And two, we've shown it on the pitch that we can compete with the best. So this team isn't like the underdog story that's fighting to punch up above its weight class. It's like, no, we've drawn City twice. We've shown that we can compete with the best. And when you look at who's ahead of us, Newcastle, who we just beat, is in 10th, Wolves in 9th, Brighton in 8th, West Ham in 7th. So just stopping there, it hurts me that those teams are ahead of us. It doesn't feel like they're better than us. And we've gone through, you know, more than two-thirds of the season, and they are. They're ahead of us in the standings on paper, and that sucks. But I think that feeling of where we are tells us the growth trajectory of what this team is. So do I think we can get there this year? My answer is no. I don't think so. I don't think we will. I think we could, but I don't think we will. I don't think we've been consistent enough to demonstrate those kinds of results. It would take a really, really strong run of form at the end of the year, and I just don't think we've been consistent enough. We'll drop points. And that's just where we are as a team right now. So unfortunately, I don't think we'll get to that 6th position. But I think it leaves our team hungry, because I think all of them will look at each other and say, we're better than these teams. And they finished above us. Why? What can we do to correct that kind of a injustice that was what this was? You know, Man U is sitting in 6th. And they bodied us the last time we played them, right? Like they took it to us. And I don't think they're any better than us. On paper today, like, I don't think they're any slightly bit better than us. And that's what I think players will kind of take to the drawing board, that bulletin board material of, this team finished way above us and they shouldn't have. Like, let's make sure that never happens again.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. And that I don't think it's easy. I don't think it's easily attainable to make it through the league. I think a lot has to go our way, but you look at who we all have left. Spurs. Yeah, that's gonna be tough. West Ham, I think, is a winnable one, seeing how they've played shitty. And just looking at, you know, you got Sheffield, Nottingham, Manchester United. We're going to want revenge there. Everton, Burnley, Brighton, Bournemouth, Villa, and then a chance to ruin Arsenal's title charge. I think there's a lot of winnable games there. And, you know, you look outside of the first 7 weeks of the year, where I think we had 8 points. Sorry, 5 points through the first 7 weeks. We've gone on to pick up 30-some points in that time. So I think form-wise, we are just like in baseball. You want to be hitting your peak at the right time. Just like in the NFL, you want to be hitting your peak at the right time. I think we're hitting our peak at the right time. And I think a lot of these teams are falling off. Manchester United has been inconsistent. West Ham has been a train wreck. Brighton is just chipping in goals at this point. And Newcastle, we saw today, is wildly inconsistent with all their injuries. I think there's a chance to move up. I think it'll come down to the last probably 1 or 2 weeks on whether or not we finish top seven. Now, is top seven good enough for Europe? I don't know how those European coefficients work. I'm just going to bank on the fact that seventh will be a conference league spot. I'm good with it. I'm going to put faith in this team only to be torn down 10 weeks from now.
I think where we've been a lot this year, being primarily in 10th or 11th for most of the year, I think seventh feels like a win, at least on, you know, at least a little bit. I don't think it's good enough. If they could find their way to sixth, it would feel like what the Packers did against the Cowboys, where they shouldn't have made the playoffs, and then they went out and fucking killed the team that was predicted to go really far in the playoffs. Like, they stole one. That's what that would feel like. They didn't deserve to do it, but they found a way to do it. And some of that is their own doing, and some of that is the screw-ups of their opponents. Fine. But, like, we play United in that run, and that's a six-point swing that we can pull on them. It's not going to be easy to do so, but that's where you can really make up some ground. And I've said this phrase probably 100 times this year. That's where you figure out the DNA of your team. Those matches, those revenge matchups, you got a young squad, got a hungry squad that's presumably fighting for nothing. But when you're fighting for nothing and the games, quote, don't matter, who's going to come out there? It's the dogs that want to go fight. It's the people that want to go out and win. And you learn about your team, you learn about the DNA of your squad and those matches. And I think if they go out and take it to United, beat them by a good margin, like, that's what moves the needle. And that's what can help really propel yourselves up in the standings, even though it might not mean something. It might be to get to seventh, right? Like, it might not be for Europe, but just for pride, I'll take that.
I'll take seventh. We've finished a match week higher than 10th just once this year. And that was about 8 weeks ago when we finished the week in ninth. So yeah, seventh will be a dream at this point.
And I don't think I just don't think it's crazy considering who occupies those spots. I just don't think it's crazy. I don't think those teams think they're better than us today.
All right. Well, Parks, that pushes us past the hour mark today. Long one. Appreciate it. So make sure, if you're listening, to subscribe, rate, and review Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to follow us on social media at @FlagDownPod. There's a man of the match poll today. Real quick, Parker, who's your man of the match?
Cole Palmer.
Mine was Mal Augusto. Those were the two getting votes. Palmer coming away with the win this week. So make sure to check those out on X. Again, we're at @FlagDownPod. Any closing thoughts?
It's a roller coaster, man. We're here to enjoy the ride.
All right. Well, I'm ready for that loop-de-loop here. So once again, thank you for listening this week. And Parks, we'll chat again next week.
Cheers, bud.
Cheers.